Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Dan Proft, liberal Georgia Logothites, and columnist Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. All right, welcome to our program, coming to you live and direct from the SiriusXM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. For the next 2 hours, if you're listening to us on radio, for the next hour, if you're watching us on television, and we're going to be talking about a lot of activities. Many of the activities are events that took place earlier today on the Sunday morning shows, and we're going to be talking about Barack Obama, his stimulus package, his suggestion that maybe it's going to take a little bit longer to shut down Guantanamo. Some of the Democrats are already a little bit concerned that Barack Obama isn't being maybe as left as they would like him to be. We're going to talk about that as the program unfolds then. And then, of course, we'll also touch base on the big story in Illinois, which also has national implications, and that is the impeachment. For the first time in the history of the state, a governor impeached earlier this week, a Democrat, Rod Blagojevich. We'll talk about that as the program unfolds. But first, Illinois and its quest for a United States senator to fill Barack Obama's seat. Roland Burris was on Face the Nation today. He is saying that he is the junior senator from Illinois. He thinks that all the papers are legitimate. And yet Senator Dick Durbin, the senior senator from Illinois, seemed somewhat willing to support what Burris had to say, but not going all the way, acknowledging that his colleagues in the U.S. Senate have a full agenda, and they still have to pass muster for Roland Burris. So Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune, and by the way, let me just begin at the beginning to our national audience of congratulating you for doing probably the best long-term overall reporting job on the actions and the disgraceful actions of the Illinois governor of any journalist in Chicago. So I congratulate with you, and I hope you accept that.
I thank
of all
you.
The people of Illinois.
I don't know sure I accept that, but I thank you for it. It's been an incredible story, fascinating one to follow. Just today in the Tribune, we ran the selection of quotes from Blagojevich's career, and
his
own words, and a longer version online that shows how this guy came in, 6 years ago, riding in on his white horse about how he was going to be the reformer, he was going to change everything, he was going to change politics, change the corruption, change the scandal. And 6 years later, he's about ready to go down.
Right. Let's talk about Roland Burris, also an interesting story. He's having a hard time getting to the United States Senate. Why, in your view, is he having this much trouble?
Well, he's having trouble because, the governor's under such a legal cloud. And there is a sense that because the governor he hasn't been indicted yet. Our governor has not been indicted yet, but he's facing these federal charges. And there's just a sense that anything that he does is illegitimate, and particularly this appointment, because many of the legal allegations against him deal with this appointment, his apparent desire to sell the Senate seat, this appointment, that anything that he did in that area is particularly illegitimate.
Democrats generally do not want to do anything that will rile up the African-American base, and yet here you have one of the most powerful members of the United States Senate and his colleague, Harry Reid. Basically, at least to some in the African-American community, is picking a fight with Roland Burris. Dan Proft, you're a conservative Republican. I'm sure you like to watch the Democrats fight. But
I do.
Does it make any sense to you?
Well, I understand it. I think they're less worried about the African-American vote per se in the short term than they are about the albatross that Blagojevich could be and frankly should be around the necks of all of the Democrat elected officials in the state of Illinois.
Including
in the
Burris?
Next cycle. Well, Burris is – I mean again, I think and I wrote about that. I thought the Burris pick was a brilliant tactical move by Blagojevich, and I think it's played out brilliantly for him with the limited things that can go brilliantly for him at this point in time. Because I think that the Senate, the U.S. Senate is going to have a hard time not seating him. And I think you're seeing that. And I think ultimately he will be seated. And the other thing it does is it puts the onus squarely back on the Illinois legislature, the Illinois General Assembly, which failed to do what it could have done, which is take that appointment away from him by passing legislation to change Illinois statute and require a special election for Obama's replacement as opposed to an appointment.
Georgia Logothetis is our liberal. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
Your reaction to Burris, and why is it taking him so long to get to the Senate?
Well, I think the reason why it's taking so long is because you have this schism between what the D.C. Democrats want and what really is occurring here in our home state. I think that Harry Reid, especially.
What do the D.C. Democrats want?
Well, the simple fact is they don't want the seat going to Republican. And had that special election occurred, I think that was Senate Majority Leader's greatest fear that the seat would flip.
Okay, so that's off the table. Now Roland Burris comes walking in, mm-hmm. and he wants to be seated. And they say, here's a guy elected statewide four times. Mm-hmm. No major scandals associated with him. Why not him?
Well, again, I think that goes, you know, not just looking now, but they're looking several years ahead in terms of reelection. If Burris becomes the senator from Illinois, and this is actually something that you're trying to secure from him, well, we'll seat you if maybe you don't run for reelection, because they're afraid once again.
But where does Harry Reid get off determining what the voters of Illinois will decide? They've already elected two African-American U.S. senators. Mm-hmm. Roland Burris has won in races against Republicans. He's 4-for-4. He's lost to Mayor Daley when he ran for mayor, and he's lost in Democratic primaries. Well, I mean, doesn't he have a pretty strong case to be made?
He's 0-for-5 in his last five elections, however.
Yeah, all primaries.
In primaries.
All primaries.
In primaries.
Right. I think there is this fear that George is talking about, and I think that it would be a mistake not to look at this pressure from Washington and a lot of this internal fussing in purely political terms. I think that Dan is wrong about what the Illinois legislature could have done. They could have passed this law all they wanted. The governor would have had to sign it. If they had passed a law saying we need a special election, what they should have done and what I argued for them to do last February was they should have seen this was a train coming down the tracks for miles, which was, you know, Barack Obama won the first caucus last year. He was the front runner for the Democratic nomination the entire time. He was ahead in the polls almost all year. Everybody in Illinois politics knew that the governor, our tainted, scandal-scarred governor, was going to have unilateral authority to make that pick. And they could have. If Dan is suggesting they could have done this in April, May, June, July, any time they could have done that, they could have overridden his veto, taken that power away from him.
Is there any? Go ahead, Dan.
Well, but remember, I mean, again, to take the governor at his word for what it's worth, but the governor did say, you know, and used it against Democrats who didn't pass this legislation, said, I'm for a special election. But because the Democrats in the General Assembly failed to act, now I'm, duty-bound by the terms of my office to make this appointment. If they would have passed the legislation earlier, he definitely wouldn't have signed it before he got arrested.
Dick Durbin the other day, after the Illinois Supreme Court said that the Secretary of State, Jesse White, did not need to affix his signature to these papers that the Senate says, oh, we've got this tradition, we've got to have this thing signed by the Secretary of State, he suggested maybe we should just wait until the Senate trial is over. What's wrong with that, Mark?
Well, you already have a legal appointment. See, the thing is, like, we are a nation of laws and not men, and the law in Illinois says that the governor, and Rod Blagojevich is our governor, is allowed to pick the next senator. He has picked the next senator.
Well, we're a nation of laws, but not if Harry Reid doesn't agree with it.
Well,
right? I mean, isn't that where we're at? We're adhering to the laws of Illinois right now. But they're not good enough for the senior senator from Nevada.
Right. And I don't think that's going to pass muster in the U.S. Supreme Court if it gets there, which it might.
1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. We'll talk about this issue and more, including Barack Obama's stimulus package, which affects everybody listening and watching the broadcast this evening. We'll take your calls and engage you in conversation when we roll on. From Chicago, I'm Bruce Duke. From Palm Springs, California to Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Georgia Logothetis has got a comment. Georgia?
I just wanted to get back to what we were stating earlier about eventually seating Burris to that Senate seat. And we had spoken about the idea of postponing the seating until after the Senate trial. And I think that's probably the valid way to go because Senator Durbin and Senator Reid are correct that the Constitution permits the Senate to evaluate the seating of its members. And here specifically where the process of that seating or the process of appointment is at issue, I think it's a wise move to wait until after the Senate trial and see what comes out.
Well, I think a hint of that is what Durbin said today on Face the Nation when he said we have further things scheduled this week in the U.S. Senate. And of course, the Senate calendar is not easy to invade, end of quote. So to me, that's Now they're looking to sort of, you know, other ways to kind of slow walk this thing in D.C.
Well, that's exactly right. This is not wisdom. This is political retrenching, right? I mean, the reason that they're so upset that Blagojevich made this appointment is because they were hoping that no appointment would be made. He wouldn't make the appointment. He'd be impeached. He'd be removed. We'd have Quinn. He'd make an appointment. We wouldn't have to have a messy election where we could lose the seat to a Republican. We wouldn't have an appointment with the taint of Blagojevich. That was their dream scenario, and Blagojevich completely turned it into a nightmare. And they've kind of been throwing up all over themselves for the last 30 days trying to figure it out.
They have totally enabled this. They've made it possible because the obvious thing for them to do is to just say, look, 2 years, Roland Burris, fine. You know, you've almost got to let him in because I think that legally he's the senator. I don't think that I think all this hand waving about the rules of the Senate, they need to have like some forms signed and sealed. You know, I was reading online somewhere today that Alaska was able to install. Remember when Governor Murkowski put his daughter in? Yeah. There's no Secretary of State in Alaska. Doesn't have one. So somehow they were able to get around the rules there. So they're able to get around these little rules here. Everybody knows that
senators. They can get around all rules.
But the thing is that I don't know why the Democrats want this hanging out there. I mean, if you're Harry Reid, you're thinking, let's just get this over with.
Obama certainly does.
Obama wants it over with too. And I think they realize that, look, Roland Burris is not going to be the biggest nitwit to ever be in the United States Senate. Let's stipulate that. He's an irritating presence. I haven't written particularly well about him. I have some issues with some of the stuff that he did years ago when he was Attorney General. All that said,
he certainly is affable.
He is certainly going to be an okay Democratic U.S. senator. He'll vote the Democratic way. And if they think they can challenge him in the primary, they can challenge him in the primary. They just need to put this behind them. I mean, and just speaking, wouldn't you? I mean, you're a Republican consultant. If you were advising them, wouldn't you say just get it over with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think I want this to go on as long as possible. Right. So I guess that tells
fight,
you what
you're
I
saying.
Think.
Fight.
Yeah, exactly.
But what's the point? First of all, they're probably going to lose.
It doesn't make any sense. And I come back to what we referenced last week, and that is Durbin. Here Durbin is the number two guy in the Senate. I mean, and he is changing his position daily on this. And it seems to me that if he wants to even sort of demonstrate to his friend and colleague, the president-to-be, the president-elect, hey, if you got problems in the Senate, I can help you in the Senate. This seems to be like a very relatively simple task that he's screwed up.
Well, I think part of it, you know, is that this whole situation was entirely unexpected. When Harry Reid came out with a signature of 50 other senators stating that under no circumstances would they cede an appointment by the governor, they clearly did not understand the governor that we're dealing with here.
They did not understand
Governor Blagojevich like we here in Illinois understand him. But, you know, they got caught. They got caught, and that now they're dealing with the backdraft of that. But I do think that some of this delay tactics and some of this kind of complex dialogue about this little minutia here and this conflict here is in part to delegitimize Burris, maybe not officially, but in terms of if we're looking ahead to a very split primary, they want to make sure that it's known to Illinois voters. Do you remember this huge thing that we had when he first tried getting the seat? Do you remember this huge controversy?
Right.
He's not as pure or as, you know, legitimate as the process would seem to be.
I think the other thing, which we referenced last week, I want to get your response. It seems to me that the way that this thing is set up is that Pat Quinn, who is likely to be governor someday when this all comes out, when the Senate in Illinois, votes after the trial. But it seems to me that he's in a trick bag now. He's got to select Roland Burris. But you don't agree with that.
No, I don't necessarily think so. I mean, I think Burris is is so tainted by the Blagojevich appointment and the ensuing circus that if Quinn stepped up and said, you know what, we need to kind of turn the page. And even though I like Roland Burris personally, he's associated with what we need to turn away from. And he could, and as long as he came up with another a legitimate nominee that was perceived as credible, I think he could walk away.
This is Dan Prof giving the Democrats bad advice deliberately. Pat Quinn will certainly, if it ever comes to Pat Quinn, it would provoke not only a huge schism in the party, it probably would provoke a constitutional crisis because, as I said, I think the Burris appointment, as distasteful and ill-mannered as it was, is a legally legitimate appointment. And so if you have your next governor appointing somebody else, first of all, it's a constitutional crisis no matter who the two people are. The fact that Roland Burris is African-American, makes the idea of Pat Quinn appointing anybody else just about unthinkable.
Yeah. Well, we are going to move on because if and when Roland Burris gets to the United States Senate, he's going to be joined by 99 other men and women who have the task of joining with the president and the members of the House to deal with the economic crisis that exists in the country. Today, Barack Obama appeared on This Week with George Stephanopoulos. They spent a lot of time talking about the economic stimulus package, and the president-elect explained it briefly to George Stephanopoulos.
Well, let's look at the package as a whole. The bulk of the package is direct government spending. And here are a few things we're going to do. We are going to double alternative energy production. We're going to weatherize 2 million homes. We are going to create a much more efficient energy system. And that's going to have enormous ramifications for the economy as a whole down the line. I think we can create a new green economy. And that's going to be one of the keys to the 21st century. Healthcare. Which is a drain on our economy, both families and businesses. We're going to make investments in information technology, update how our systems work, reduce medical error. That's going to save people money. Education. We want to create a classroom for the 21st century for every child, as well as community colleges and public universities. So we're making a series of investments that point to the future, as well as just dealing with rebuilding our roads, bridges, et cetera.
Judge Ologothides, your reaction to his plan?
I think it
is it enough?
I think it evidences why he won the election, which is it's based on pragmatism. It's certainly not the huge spending that was promised in the campaign in terms of implementing bold and large scale initiative, but it is in effect what is needed now to begin the investment for those bold proposals. Obviously, within his first few days in office, he can't accomplish everything, and I know that. Some people during the campaign said he was overpromising and that now they're trying to say, well, see, he was overpromising. That's not the case. He is above all a pragmatist and he knows that getting in the first thing first, he needs to start undoing some of the damage over the past 8 years. And then we can begin restructuring and rebuilding based on these new proposals.
He's also been talking about tax cuts, Dan Proft. Your reaction?
Well, I mean, the fact that Barack Obama's campaign was about pragmatism, what a revelation. I don't think it was about pragmatism at all. It was about unicorns and fairy dust. That's what his entire presidential campaign was about.
But he won.
I understand. The clip that you play there is his neo-Keynesian blather. Because he's running into problems in his own caucus with that increasing the amount of the tax relief in this package from $100 billion to $300 billion. And instead of the original $100 billion that he was talking about, which was kind of like tax credits, which is essentially a different form of government spending, in this package that he's proposed, he actually has some really decent business tax cuts and tax relief. That is important. That actually does, I will concede the point, show a level of pragmatism that is riling up people like Nancy Pelosi and to some extent Harry Reid in terms of their demands for strictly demand-side spending and an immediate repeal of the Bush tax cuts.
Apparently he is backing off on his $250,000 pledge. I mean, the thing about he's going to raise taxes on people making over $250,000
right.
a year. He's backing off on that.
He's going to let it expire.
He's going to let the Bush tax cuts expire, which is I think it does get to what George was talking about, which is that this it looks to me like there's some definite political calculations here in terms of him trying to – he wants to pass this stimulus package with 80 votes or 85 votes. He doesn't want it to squeak by with 61 in the Senate. You know, he has this He wants to really get and push this thing with a big mandate, legislative mandate behind him.
Well, I think that's part of it. I also think that part of it is guys like Austin Goolsbee and Larry Summers. These are not, you know, left wing. These aren't Paul Krugman. That's not where they're coming from. So they understand that. I mean, in order to actually get to even some approximation of this 4 million jobs he says he's going to create, you better be about incentivizing job creation, about incentivizing small businesses to start and expand. And so I think you see some of these significant, really, changes from what he was talking about in the campaign.
Well, and I think this just goes back to that whole philosophy that we heard throughout the campaign where it doesn't have to be either or. It's not just tax cuts or job creation. It's not business incentives or tax cuts or raising taxes. That really there is this kind of middle ground where you can have both. And I think this is what is evidenced in his proposal, which is, yes, we're stimulating the economy. But at the same time, you heard him cite some very progressive ideas in terms of building a green economy for the 21st century.
Well, one of the things that interests me about this is that when you have money just going into people's pockets, these direct stimulus programs, we're in a situation right now where people are so afraid of their jobs, they're afraid of the future, the consumer confidence is so low that money doesn't get spent the way it's supposed to get
right,
spent. So that when you just
like the money that went to the banks,
right?
Like the billions that the hundreds of billions of dollars that nobody knows how it was been spent.
I'm saying that if when you look at the unemployment figures and also consumer confidence, that's where the problem is right now, is that you have to turn that around. People have to believe in the future because they're not going to spend if they don't.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8289. When we return, your telephone calls. From Sacramento, California to Austin, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. We'll go to calls in just a moment. But the president-elect was on this week with George Stephanopoulos this morning, as we referenced in the last segment. And one of the other issues that he talked about is an issue that those left of center have been talking about for a long, long time. We got to close Guantanamo. We talked about it during the campaign. It really is one of the major litmus tests of the left. And this is what Barack Obama had to say to George Stephanopoulos about the speed in which that will be done.
Realize. And we are going to get it done. But part of the challenge that you have is that you've got a bunch of folks who've been detained, many of whom may be very dangerous, who have not been put on trial or have not gone through some adjudication. And some of the evidence against them may be tainted, even though it's true. And so how to balance creating a process that adheres to rule of law, habeas corpus, basic principles of Anglo-American legal system, but doing it in a way that doesn't result in releasing people who are intent on blowing us up.
So not necessarily
first
100 days.
That is a challenge. I think it's going to take some time, and you know, our legal teams are working in consultation with our national security apparatus as we speak to help design exactly what we need to do. But I don't want to be ambiguous about this. We are going to close Guantanamo, and we are going to make sure that the procedures we set up are ones that abide by our Constitution.
George Logothetis, are you willing to give him time? Sounds like he's not.
Absolutely.
This is not a big,
I mean, how
issue,
refreshing but... is it after 8 years to hear a president talk not just about getting something done, but about getting it done right? And I think this is what we're seeing from Barack Obama. Had he, on his first day, issued an executive order to close down Guantanamo, he's absolutely correct that because of the last 8 years, the process down there, we don't know what's going on, whether or not the evidence presented is valid, whether it's tainted or not. It would have been indeed reckless or irresponsible to issue an edict releasing everybody. He can obviously say, we're going to close Guantanamo, but we're going to do it in a responsible fashion. We're going to do it with respect for due process. And I think that's exactly what he said.
You know, I mean,
improv. Do you see it a little bit differently?
You know, I mean, I understand we're in the honeymoon phase, and you know, we got to give him a chance, and we got to just dismiss everything that was said in the campaign.
But wait, how does this conflict with what he said on the campaign?
Are you kidding me? What he said during the campaign was essentially was unlike that, was unambiguous, which is, you know, closing Guantanamo Bay, accusing the Bush administration of perpetrating torture against innocent people at Guantanamo. Now all of a sudden he realizes, oh gee, we might have some enemy combatants down there.
On the campaign trail, he never said that everybody at Guantanamo was innocent, and he never gave the implication that the doors would be closed and everybody would be able to run free and innocent. Absolutely not.
The other interview that took place today was with Wolf Blitzer with Vice President Dick Cheney, and it was Blitzer's last big interview in handling that show. He's leaving it today with John King coming in next week. The last word. But what the vice president said was, when you look at the total record, first of all, there were no regrets. No one expected to have any mea culpas from Dick Cheney at any time. But basically what he said was, there has not been a second terrorist attack against the United States. We've got another week to go. And the great challenge to President-elect Obama is going to be, is he going to be able to say that at the end of his term? Is he going to have, 4 years, which there's going to be no attack? Because if there is, people are going to come back to some of these questioning techniques. He also acknowledged that there were those that were waterboarded, and that there was evidence that or information intelligence that came from them that saved American lives. So Does the average American really care much about this issue, Eric Zorn?
The average American, I don't think, cares that much about the torture issue, cares that much about Guantanamo.
What about Dick Cheney's comment?
About
his comment. I mean, in other words, if we're, you know, it is not, you know, I mean, to give credit to the Bush administration, which, by the way, is not the purpose of this week's show. Next week, we're going to talk about, the 8 years of George Bush. But again, do they not get credit for that?
Well, or do we add blame to them for the idea that perhaps that the world is a less safe place, that America is less safe than it was before we started our misadventures? I mean, these are questions that the great unknown. I mean, do we actually stop a serious threat, or were they actually focused elsewhere during this time? I don't know, and I do know. I heard also the interview with the George Bush Jr. and Senior on Fox News Sunday, and mm-hmm. and there was a lot of like, well, yeah, we think that when history is written, that the waterboarding of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed that was going to turn up some information, but we can't tell you what it was now. We can't tell you, but we think that history will vindicate us. We'll see.
Let's go to Glendale, Illinois. Jim is listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hi, thank you. I just want to talk about that I support Blagojevich staying in power as long as possible. I'll turn this off just a second.
Yeah, please do. Is that some sort of a monitor that you're wearing?
As long as possible. And that I've read his complaint in the entirety, 79 pages or whatever. It was on WVON's website there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a nice public service that they do, because more people should read that document.
The impeachment report.
Certainly it's riddled with a lot of profanity, but it's very good reading, and it shows the average Illinois citizen just what's going on in the mind of a corrupt governor. So I would like to...
So you listen. We're going to move on because you take care of your monitors. But your point is,
car thief.
You want to car alarms breaking into a car. Let's go to Jim in South Elgin, also listening to us on WLS. Do you agree that it's maybe good to keep the governor around so that he's a good example to everybody about what a corrupt politician is?
Well, I think as Dan was saying so eloquently, that the whole thing's blown up in their face, and this is an indication of the whole country. How screwed up Illinois has been over the years, and I think this is going to be exported to Washington, so watch out. But I called because I think a lot of the problem we have is the media not being honest journalistically. The Tribune, as you know, outed Jack Ryan in the early days, which caused, I think, essentially Barack to win the senatorial seat.
We should mention, by the way, for those listening around the country, so they know reference that you're speaking of, Jack Ryan was a Republican who was running for the U.S. Senate in a primary fight, or in a primary battle. There were questions about whether or not his...
After the primary.
He had won the primary. There were questions about his marriage and about a sealed divorce decree. The Tribune asked for that to be revealed, and when it was revealed, it revealed that there was some unpleasant things, very unpleasant things in the divorce case, and it caused Jack Ryan really to be forced off the ticket.
They were unpleasant. They were matters to do with his marriage and sexual matters. It wasn't nothing
right.
Illegal.
But again, it was. I mean, his point is that the Tribune. The Tribune, because of its pressure, got rid of Jack Ryan.
Well, see, to me, the media is very dishonest. Even now, you're hearing reports that the only selected people can ask Barack questions, in the interviews, these press interviews and things. And they're all kind of like pre-staged, and the answers are just sort of vanilla fudge responses, and there's no real questioning of the future president.
Well,
it's a shame.
Let Eric respond.
Well, first of all, all presidents know who they're going to call on during these press conferences. These press conferences are pretty well.
Well, I think George Bush got the media kicked him in the pants quite a bit. They were very nasty with him.
Ronald Reagan didn't always know that.
I mean, these guys know who they want to call on. Try going into a news conference and raising your hand and see if anyone calls on you. I mean, if you want to go, I'm not sure what the Jack Ryan story has, what it has to do with anything today. The Tribune sued to have a court file that was sealed, to have it unsealed. They thought that it was a matter of public interest, and the judge agreed that it should have been public, and it was public. And
the Tribune did suggest that he be. Recalled. I mean, they were supporting a recall. They wanted him to be Blagojevich.
Blagojevich. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, they were talking about Jack Ryan. Okay, yeah. The Tribune. No. The Tribune has been. I think the Tribune's done a fine job on these stories, but I work there, so.
Okay.
Well, I think that the media has a lot more venom against conservative politicians than they do the liberal people or Democrats?
Oh, I think the in this particular case, I think that the media has pretty has demonstrated that they can go after
I think they'll go after
the governor.
Any blood in the water. So.
But I will say to one thing to Jim's point. I mean that's true. But here's the one thing that I think in this saga, this Blagojevich-Burris saga that we're talking about, where the media has been a little derelict in its duty. And you saw it when they went through the impeachment vote and all these Democrat legislators got to pontificate for 2 or 3 minutes before they voted aye. And that is this idea that Blagojevich, one bad apple, that's it. We got to get rid of this guy, and then the ship of state will be righted, and everything will be right again in Illinois. And that is farcical, number one, and everybody in Illinois knows that. And number two, all of these folks who've been around in office for 20 and 30 years, and including to some extent in the U.S. Senate, they have blood on their hands too. There are no white knights in this story. And unfortunately, I understand why all the focus on Blagojevich, that's where it should be. But none of these other Democrat politicians that have been around and have been complicit and have been his campaign co-chairmen in 2006 as the House Speaker was,
there
should be blood on their hands too.
There's some people that do, and again, he was a guest last week on the show. Jack Franks is one. Jack Franks is a Democrat. He's a member of the House. He isn't particularly close to Michael Madigan either. And yet he's been out there calling, questioning Rod Blagojevich. And certainly he literally questioned him for the last 3 weeks or questioned his motives in the impeachment vote. And here's a guy that was out there. He was not unafraid. But you're right. A lot of these other elected Democrats, Michael Madigan was the chairman of his campaign.
There's an excellent op-ed.
This guy has been a crook for a long time.
There's an excellent op-ed in today's Tribune by Ed Eisendrath. Go to ChicagoTribune.com. He ran against Blagojevich in 2006, and he doesn't call anybody out by name, which I think he should have. But he talks a lot about how the Democrats who are now standing up saying shame on Rob Blagojevich, they were behind him, and they knew about this stuff. This stuff was no secret in 2006. I mean, the stuff about him, the wiretap stuff, yes, but a lot of the other stuff in this impeachment document, that was there in 2006. So these Democrats, yes. Dan's absolutely right about it.
His political MO was not unknown to virtually every politician in the state of Illinois. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. Let's go to Al listening to us in Tinley Park, Illinois. Go ahead.
Hi, Bruce. I just wanted to mention that, really quickly, I just want to say a really quick point. You raised Guantanamo. I hope that Guantanamo is closed as soon as possible. But even more important is the Bagram Air Base that's holding even more people without legal rights, and they're under even more harsher conditions. But the point that I was wanted to make was our concern for state corruption should also make us think about what's going on in federal corruption, and it's in the context of the suffering in Gaza. What really grieves me is that our Congress is sold out to the APAC, American Israeli Political Action Committee, and that's not good for us. It's not good for Israel in the long run. It really isn't. It just helps their hardliners, and it just makes the Palestinians suffer. And what the media is derelict in their duty beyond Jack Ryan is saying the overall story in that area, which was Palestinians were just farming, raising their children, living life, and then the Jews were suffering in Europe, and they were brought in, and the natives had to lose their homes to accommodate the Jewish people. And now the Palestinians are saying, okay, we're willing to take only 22% of our original land.
Al, before we go into a whole recapitulation of the last 60 years, let's let our guests respond to your core question, which is, does the Palestinian cause, does it get a fair shake? Is it viewed in a positive light, in a fair light, when discussions are taking place in the halls of Congress? Georgia Logothetis.
Well, I think you're obviously going to get people on either side of the issue thinking that their side is not represented properly. And I think if you take an objective position, depending on which media outlet you're looking at, obviously there's some that take one slant and some that take another. But I think overall, both sides can agree that, you know, we're kind of repeating the same type of debacle over and over again. And whether it be, you know, one president or another term or another term, it really becomes a question of, is this going to be a perpetual state, or do we finally have an administration along with the public support necessary, not only obviously from Americans, but from people in the region, to try and broach some type
of conflict? Is there anything that the United – does anybody at this table have anything new to say about what is it that the United States could do in this situation to make peace in the Middle East? Anything.
Yeah,
can we do anything?
I have something new to say, that there's it's very limited. And to talk about presidential administrations and their ability to do anything is preposterous. And so we should stop doing it. What we should do is stand with our friend Israel, stand with the democracy in the Middle East, stand against terrorists like Hamas. And that's what it is, a terrorist organization as recognized not only by the United States, but by the European Union.
But don't we do that?
Yes, we should do it. And we should do it unapologetically. And we shouldn't do this moral equivalency that the caller was going towards, or actually he was even further along the line, comparing Hamas terrorists to Israeli soldiers. Terrorists, soldiers defending their land from extinction and their people from extinction, which is the coda of Hamas. And it was the coda of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt from which Hamas was born. And it's the coda of in Damascus. So let's if anything a president could do in this country, it's speak with moral clarity and stop morally equivocating on Hamas versus Israelis.
Back to you.
Yeah, I want to say a very important thing the media is missing. You know, Hamas has given out at their highest levels from Damascus, they issued multiple statements saying that they're willing to give the negotiations between the Palestinians and the Israelis to the Palestinian Authority, and they're willing to live by whatever agreement that comes by. Now, yeah, it's true that they do not recognize Israel, but what they clarify and say is that they do not recognize the moral legitimacy of their homeland being stripped for some other people. However, having said that, though, they're still willing to live with it, and they believe that God will eventually bring justice to them.
Well, but, I'm very happy for them. Guess what? The international community doesn't recognize Hamas.
And Hamas is devoted to the extinction of Israel.
I just clarified and said that morally they say that's their right, not to kill every Jew, but to dismantle a state that was put on their homes. But they're still willing to not do that by themselves. They're saying that God will do it.
Well, guess what? God isn't sending the rockets into Israel.
Right.
Hamas is.
Well,
and I think
rockets aren't going to cause extinction to Israel, which is 1,000 times bigger than Gaza. Let's kind of be reasonable.
The Israelis had pulled out, and for pulling out, the way they're treated is the rockets are being shot to kill Israel.
Gaza was under a siege for
Israelis.
2 years.
Pardon?
Did you forget that? How would Chicago feel if we were under siege for 2 years? The UN is saying that their children are stunted. You know, this for 2 years, for the truth that Hamas and Israel had, Hamas stuck to that truth. Not one rocket was fired during the truce. As soon as the truce ended, we're having this conflict because
one way that they could make things a little bit easier for themselves is just to acknowledge that Israel has a right to exist. Period. You know, spend some time talking to the younger generation of Palestinians instead of giving them guns and telling them to hate Jews and kill Jews and Israelis all around the world. Acknowledge that Israel has a right to exist, and it will. And the United States of America today, tomorrow, and forever is going to stand by that policy. Get it. Understand it. It's not going to change. You can talk about Congress doesn't give a fair shake. In these debates, not when you have one side that is idiotic in its belief. I'm Bruce Dumont. We'll be back for another full hour of Beyond the Beltway. Our guests this evening, Georgia Logothetis, Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune, and Dan Proft, commentator for WLS Radio with Don Wade and Roma in the morning. Again, if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. If you're listening to us on radio, phone lines remain open at 1-800-723-8289. Beyond the Beltway tonight, featuring commentary by conservative Dan Proft, liberal Georgia Logothetis from the Daily Kos. She is the contributing editor of the Daily Kos, and columnist Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune, who's been with the Chicago Tribune for over 25 years.
Yeah.
25 years. Hard to believe, and you still look young for your age.
Thank you, Bruce.
1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number. We have callers on the line. They've been standing by. We got some people exercised in hour number one. Let's go to Mike listening to us on WNOX in Knoxville, Tennessee. Mike, you're on the air coast to coast.
Yes, sir, Mr. Dumont. Thank you for taking my call. I do have issue regarding a portrayal of the situation in the Middle East at this point.
Yes.
In front of me, I have the complete 460-page policy paper called A Clean Break, A New Strategy for Securing the Realm, which is in Israel comparable to the National Security Strategy paper that's written in the United States. And basically, this entire issue is not accurate or correct. The Palestinians, or even the Hamas group, has in the Washington Times, excuse me, in the Washington Post, in the New York Times, in the Wall Street Journal, even in the English Financial Times, stated that their objective is not the destruction of Israel, but a Palestinian state from the 67 borders on. Now that is what they have stated unequivocally, publicly, and even in their internal discussions. What we know is that is what their statement was and is. The fact of what happened in Gaza, the Israelis pulled out, yes, but they blockaded all openings. There was no movement going in or out of the Gaza Strip. There was the seaports were closed. Fishing was restricted to no more than 3 miles. No form of e-commerce coming in or out. And basically, they even dropped the amount of humanitarian goods to less than 60% of the bare minimum.
Mike, my question to you. Let me interrupt for a moment. If everything you say is true, if Here's my question to you. Why would Israel do what they did right now? What's the timing? Why? What's the benefit to them to do what they're doing?
According to the General Ashkenazi, and that is his name, not my name. His name is Ashkenazi. He said, quote unquote, the issue here is to understand that peace has not succeeded for us, rather than succeeded and has hindered us. And our opponents must understand that our goals are to pursue not only national sovereignty, but supranational sovereignty. Supranational sovereignty over the area, okay? The issue here has nothing to do with the Palestinians. It's already been decided that the only peace they're gonna have is when the surrounding regions understand that the territorial imperatives of Israel are understood and accepted, and the supra sovereignty of Israel is also accepted.
Dan Proft is shaking his head
as
you speak.
A couple of things you said. I mean, one of the reasons that they have. You call them blockades. I'll call them kind of securitize their borders, is to prevent the flow of weapons to.
I totally understood, sir. I totally understand. But
okay. Well, then don't talk about a commerce. It's about the flow of weapons from Syria and Egypt.
Neither Hamas nor Hezbollah was ever diverted any weapons through the checkpoints.
Mike, here's the big Mike. Here's the question that I have as an American: what is it that the United States can do to make this better? What do we have to do?
Basically, the first thing is that we have to understand that it is not within our security or nor national interest to have a regime that states its goal is supranational over a region.
Yeah,
what I got in front of me here is the national security.
All right, you've given your answer. Let's let Eric respond to that.
Can we talk about
let me expand the question to everybody? What is it that the United States can do, if anything, to resolve or to ease tensions in the Middle East that will last more than a couple of months at a time?
I was going to say, let's talk about something non-controversial, like gun control or something. I think in terms of finding the compromise, finding the answer on this radio show or in the upcoming administration, the previous administration, it's just about impossible. And what we can hope for, I think, is secure borders and rooting out terrorism as much as possible, and that, you know, not everyone's going to get their way over there, obviously. And so we're going to, you know, I think we're going to have to, you know, settle for a certain status quo and live with it and realize that we can't make everybody happy over there.
There are those in the liberal community who in recent years have been speaking out in support of the Palestinian cause. Would you acknowledge that? And is it a wise thing for them to do? And how much influence have they had on trying to ease tensions?
Well, there certainly have been progressives who have spoken out in support of the Palestinian people, who are the ones that are suffering in terms of the humanitarian crisis. Certainly not in support of the Palestinian government, obviously, as a separate issue. Going back to the question that you had stated, what can America do? Really, our role in this situation, we have to realize we're a country that's about, you know, 200-something years old. The situation that's taking place in the Middle East goes far beyond that. And certainly it cannot be solved in one administration. It hasn't been solved in, you know, decades now. The situation being, though, what can we do in terms of bringing both sides to the table, which certainly is the one thing that at least we should not stop doing? Because when both sides stop talking, that's when the bombs keep dropping. So I think it's important to be a facilitator to negotiations and discussions. And it may not be America taking the primary role, because obviously we have a strong support of Israel and we may be viewed as, you know, taking one position over another at the table. But working with our allies to make sure that there is a forum open for the leaders to get together and at least keep talking about a resolution, because keep talking about the resolution is the only way that eventually maybe peace won't be secured, but at least some security will.
Dan's shaking his head.
There is no discussion that can be had that does not start with removing the obliteration of the state of Israel and the eradication
Absolutely.
Of the Jewish people from your mission statement.
Absolutely.
So until Hamas or a lot of the other Muslim extremist groups want to do that, there is no conversation. The conversation is politicians talking and little else. The humanitarian crisis in Hamas, again, the one thing that I think America should do in Palestine or in the Palestinian territory, the one thing America should do on this issue is speak with moral clarity. And if they want to avert the humanitarian crisis among the Palestinian people, if they want to see Palestinian people stop dying, it is Hamas that is killing its own people. It is not the Israelis. By the agenda they are pursuing, it is Hamas killing their own people, and America should state that clearly.
And much of the Arab world is not supportive of that in any way, because they fear that could rise up in their own countries.
Well, right, and obviously Hamas is a Sunni organization, so you have Sunni Shia conflicts and so forth. But yeah, it could absolutely be a conflagration in the Middle East. But we need to speak with moral clarity here, and we do too much in this country of pretending that, you know, it's the same thing Russia Georgia. Well, it's violence on both sides. No, it isn't. It's Russian aggression. Well, Hamas and Israel, it's violence on both sides. No, it isn't. It's Hamas is a terrorist organization pursuing terrorist ends.
So in your view, the Palestinian cause is getting more than its fair shake in the discussion at the national level.
They're not called a terrorist organization, which they are.
1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border and around the world on XM and Sirius Satellite Radio. I'm Bruce Dumont, every Sunday night live from Chicago's West Side.
Husband or kids have sore throats, I know I have the touch that can relieve their pain. It's called the Chloraseptic Touch.
Now moms have new Chloraseptic Maximum Strength Spray. Its targeted nozzle puts the strongest medicine you can get without a prescription right where you need it. Fast relief starts the moment Chloraseptic Max touches your throat. Plus, it coats to protect.
Nothing soothes like a mother's touch and Chloraseptic.
New Chloraseptic Maximum Strength Spray. One touch relief. The Chloraseptic Touch. Use as directed.
Prostate cancer. It's an important subject. Did you know there are more new cases of prostate cancer each year than any other cancer? That's why it's so important to get regular doctor checkups and ask about ways to reduce your risk of prostate cancer. You can also switch your multivitamin to One-A-Day Men's Health Formula, a complete multivitamin specially formulated with selenium, which emerging research suggests may help reduce the risk of prostate cancer. One-A-Day, the official multivitamin of Major League Baseball.
From Fayetteville, North Carolina to Santa Cruz, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. We've spent the last 20 minutes trying to solve the Middle East crisis. We've been unsuccessful, and we basically come to the conclusion.
Just give it 10 more minutes, because I think we can do it.
It's not likely. I think we could take it to the half hour. We still would not be able to do it. But let's go to the core of what the caller called about, and that is, do the American people, have they received a fair discussion of the issues? Or just as perhaps those that reside in certain sectors of the world, they are told constantly that Israel, you know, can't exist, we cannot have the state of existence, and we want to eradicate the state of Israel. I mean, have we been told so often in the United States that Israel is our best friend in the world or our best friend in the Middle East, that maybe the American people have a strong allegiance to Israel that maybe in times of crisis needs at least a second look? Dan?
Well, I don't think Israel, just like America, is not beyond reproach. It's not beyond asking questions or examining policies and policy choices that they may make and raising questions if and when appropriate. So nobody's beyond reproach. But no, I don't think that we've been fed misinformation with respect to Israel's precarious existence in the Middle East and who exactly Israel's enemies are and how serious they are about trying to eradicate the Jewish people.
Eric, what's your answer to the same question?
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel that there's certainly plenty of information out there. I find myself, the more I read about the history of this conflict, the more I just kind of throw my hands about it and say, well, you know, there's clearly no easy solution to this. The grievances go so deep and so far back that, again, I would just get back to my point that we have to decide. We can't keep looking back. I mean, and I say that from a position as someone who would recommend policy to America. We can't just keep looking back and trying to say, okay, well, you have a point here, you have a point there. We have to look forward, and I think security is the key. So,
you know, speaking of looking back, one of the things that happens in whenever there's a change of administration, regardless of which way it's going, there are those that are supporters of the incoming administration that want to use this newfound power or this newfound, mandate, if you will, to look into the discretions or indiscretions and perhaps skullduggery and illegal activities of a previous administration. That's been going on in all kinds of transitions we've had. And certainly, Gloria, Georgia, in your the political left has been after George Bush. They've wanted him impeached for the last several years. They want Dick Cheney impeached. I saw a sign on a house in Oak Park just a couple of weeks ago: impeach the president. I mean, he's only got a week to go now, but they still want to do it. This morning, when Barack Obama was on with George Stephanopoulos, he talked about the possibility of spending some of his political capital on investigating any potential illegal activities during the Bush administration, emphasizing the nation's future security was tantamount.
We're still evaluating how we are going to approach the whole issue of interrogations, detentions, and so forth. And obviously we're going to be looking at past practices. And I don't believe that anybody is above the law. On the other hand, I also have a belief that we need to look forward as opposed to looking backwards. And part of my job is to make sure that, for example, at the CIA, you've got extraordinarily talented people who are working very hard to keep Americans safe. I don't want them to suddenly feel like they've got to spend all their time looking over their shoulders and lawyering.
So no 9/11 commission with independent subpoena power?
Yeah, we have not made final decisions, but my instinct is for us to focus on how do we make sure that moving forward, we are doing the...
Georgia, is this more backpedaling on the part of Barack Obama?
I don't think so, because he made it very clear in the campaign, and I don't recall which interview it was exactly, but... You know, everybody brought up the question of, well, are we going to impeach George Bush? Are you going to go after Karl Rove? Are you going to, in terms of, obviously before the campaign began was the question of impeachment. And then once the campaign began, those issues were still kind of front and center with some segments of the left. And his answer was consistent with what he's saying now, which is, look, my policy as president is to look forward. And I think the question of accountability, though, is still there. And that's what he referenced in his answer there, which is, when it comes to certain issues, there will be investigations. There, people will be held accountable. And I think if you look at the Senate rules that were just passed, the Senate did something interesting, which was it retained the ability to call for testimony anybody who was subpoenaed by the previous Congress. So even though those subpoenas had expired, meaning that they could still call, you know, Karl Rove, Harriet Myers, those types of people, Josh Bolton. And that is not because, you know, this Congress is going to go on a fishing expedition. But there is a sense of, look, there were certain wrongs that were allegedly committed in the previous administration. George Bush is certainly not going to be dragged back into the Congress to, you know, come and testify on certain issues. But when it comes to certain items, maybe torture, maybe the corruption, the widespread corruption with the billions of dollars that have gone missing in Iraq, you can't turn your back on that, and there needs to be a mechanism for accountability. By the same token, you don't focus your administration around holding those people accountable, but it is certainly a part of your administration.
Dan, your response.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I mean, some of these allegations here are allegations of war crimes, and this may be something that if we don't do something about it, some of the international community may do something about it. They may begin, you know, filing charges, trying to drag us into international
courts. Does it fly in the face of his core message of change, however? That it seems to me that if you look at the one thing that I think brought him to the vast majority of support is that he really does want to change things. He doesn't want to pick a fight with Republicans just because they're Republicans. And he doesn't want to, you know, do some of the things that maybe his harder-edged, you know, left wing mm-hmm. would want him to do. I mean, frankly, I mean, I don't like any, I don't like any wrongdoing, but I would hate to see, you know, some of these issues be regurgitated.
Well, or just consuming the nation when we just can't.
I mean, like
doing
Abu Ghraib. Well, I mean, you know, we spent a lot of time on that. Well, we acknowledge that there was a lot of mistakes there. It certainly wasn't in the best interest of the United States. But I mean, do we have to bring it up again?
Also too. I mean, look, I do not support torture. I respect the Geneva Convention. Okay, but the idea that Barack Obama is going would allow the Congress to bring people back to talk about the treatment of enemy combatants and suspected terrorists and stuff like that, he would be crazy. He'd be out of his mind to do that.
Is there a way?
There's no way he's going to do it, and that's what he basically telegraphed.
And also, by the way, because you obviously were supportive of this statement. What about the selection of Leon Panetta? Is everybody comfortable with the selection of Leon Panetta?
I just want to follow up on basically what George and Dan both were saying, which was, is there a forward-looking way of doing
Absolutely.
That sort of thing? Like you have a commission, and I know commissions get a
don't
a
do it on your watch,
but do it.
Set
do
the
it.
Rules. Make sure that find out what the things were, and just say, we're not going to do these things on our watch.
Well, I think just to get back to what you were saying about whether this comports with the idea of change. How can you possibly have change on an issue unless you know why something went wrong? And so, for example, how can you have change in how contracts are awarded for, you know, multi-billion-dollar contracts for foreign policy unless you investigate what type of corruption took place in the lead-up to the Iraq
War? Well, good. Then the first thing he should investigate is where the $750 billion in George Bush's stimulus package went.
That's another one. Absolutely.
Start there.
Right.
You know, I mean, here's the problem. Here's the reality.
And there would be bipartisan support for that.
Well, and here's the reality. Guess what, folks? Government doesn't do big social engineering projects well, whether it's a war or whether it's managing every possible transaction in our economy. So what you have now is Barack Obama is, ironically, the George Bush's third term with Bill Clinton personnel. Because that's what he's pursuing. It's that we got a rehashed stimulus package. We're going to have further government spending and government expansion in the areas of healthcare and education, which is essentially what George Bush did, particularly in his second term, but with No Child Left Behind in his first term as well.
The only difference, George Bush didn't do it well, you know. So now it's going to
right. Again, that's the problem.
This is a fundamental philosophical disagreement.
Exactly. And this is what we're going to see in practice. This is what's going to be great because socialists, the left, always argue. You know what the problem with government is? We never had the right people in charge. The problem with the Soviet Union is we had the wrong guys on the Politburo. Well, great. Now we got the right guys in charge, the left says. Now government can embark on all these big government spending programs. Now they can assume $7 trillion in debt. Half of our nation's wealth in debt over the last 120 days has been assumed. And the right people are in charge. So it's going to be the days of milk and honey. We'll see.
The Republicans did that, though.
Exactly. No, I'm lumping the Republicans in and George Bush in with Obama and these wrong-headed policies. Absolutely.
But we're getting to this whole idea of stimulus, right? I mean, you're getting back to this idea of like, is that as Obama has been saying, you know, government, you know, contrary to what Reagan said, the government's the problem. Obama's saying government's the answer here, that we need to have these spending projects.
We need them to be involved at the moment. The question is, who's going to control some of these big, you know, public works programs that he wants mm-hmm. to get involved in? Is that money going to come directly from the feds, or is it going to go through states?
Right, block.
Mayor Daley in Chicago wants it to go through the city. He doesn't want it to go through the state.
I'm sure he does.
You know, sure. You know, sure. Nobody would want anything to go through the state of Illinois.
These are all good questions, but it seems perfectly obvious to me that we do need to do something here, and we do need
but
to
don't
assume
we,
this
don't
debt.
We really well, need but, a mob museum? Don't we really need a
well, but, yeah. but okay, well, the mob museum is a good example. That, apparently, that project is shovel ready. You know, and apparently it's where you can get people employed.
I know a broadcast
right
museum that's shovel ready. Okay, we're going to spend money. Screw the mob; they've got their own ways of making money.
You set them up perfectly for that.
And how does an idea like that even get floated?
It gets floated by the mayor of Las Vegas, who all the mayors of the cities came up with their wish list for particular projects that are quote unquote shovel ready.
If I may, I think this is where, and obviously this is my blogger perspective, this is where I think technology is really going to play a key role in how people interact with their government. Because if you have these types of projects, right, that were never known before, that really didn't come up before, if you have what Obama proposed in Congress, in the Senate, which was a Google for government, where you could research everything, then it really doesn't allow these projects to be hidden.
Back shortly from Chicago.
Prostate cancer. It's an important subject. Did you know there are more new cases of prostate cancer each year than any other cancer? That's why it's so important to get regular doctor checkups and ask about ways to reduce your risk of prostate cancer. You can also switch your multivitamin to One-A-Day Men's Health Formula, a complete multivitamin specially formulated with selenium, which emerging research suggests may help reduce the risk of prostate cancer. One a day, the official multivitamin of Major League Baseball.
You know, one of my favorite places to sing is my car.
You've always wanted to know who's on Match.com, and we want you to know it's okay to look.
A 1962 Cadillac on a long road trip. I mean, what else are you going to do?
He's Match.com member Crooner Cool. And you can email him right now.
Baby.
With 20,000 new people joining every day, we guarantee you'll find someone special in 6 months. Or we'll give you 6 months free. Visit Match.com today for details.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. Our conservative tonight is Dan Proft. He is a commentator for Don Wade and Roma in the mornings on our flagship station, WLS Radio. Also represents the village of Cicero, Illinois. Georgia Logothetis is here. She is the contributing editor of the Daily Cause. She is one of the most popular liberal bloggers in the United States. So her words carry weight, and she is also a lawyer when she's not blogging. And also joining us this evening is Eric Zorn, the longtime columnist for the Chicago Tribune, who really was one of the first, at least in mainstream journalism, to discover the internet and blogging. And so you're a pioneer.
I discovered it. I invented it in some respects. And I was the first blogger at ChicagoTribune.com. We now have about 30 of them.
Yeah, so. You were way ahead of the curve. We have been talking about what is happening and who the new senator from Illinois will be. That is certainly a topic of discussion that we've shared with you in hour number one. But let's talk about, for a few moments, about Caroline Kennedy. How excited are you about the possibility of Caroline Kennedy being the Democratic senator from the state of New York, Georgia?
To be honest, I'm never excited when a person's name thrusts them ahead of the pack of, you know, either far more qualified candidates or candidates who may be able to do the job a lot better. As far as Caroline Kennedy goes, I was very disturbed by some of the approaches that she had to the media over these last few weeks. You know, she ran away from certain questions. When people questioned her qualifications, she completely dodged the answers. Sarah Palin had an interesting interview in which she wondered why Caroline Kennedy wasn't getting the same type of treatment that she received.
Gee, I wonder.
Which certainly.
Well, wait a minute. She was right. I mean, they're talking about the difference between being the senator from New York and being the vice president of the United States. I think the latter requires much more scrutiny.
Absolutely. So, but putting that issue aside, I mean, my issue with her is that she has been essentially absent from the political scene for the last decade, and especially during these last 8 years, when the Democrats really did need a progressive voice, a true leader, to come up and step and provide some type of guidance on certain issues. When the times were tough, she wasn't there. When it came to shaping our party's policy, when it came to the rebirth of the Democratic Party, she was essentially silent. She wasn't on the map. And yet when this political opportunity came up, and I don't fault her at all for it, of course, but when this political opportunity came up, she figured, I have the name, I can raise the money, and I'll put my hat in the ring.
The political opportunity that came up was when she decided that she was going to support Barack Obama at a very crucial time in the nomination process. Mm-hmm. She brought Uncle Teddy along. I mean, that was that propelled Barack Obama in this campaign. So she waited for the right time to sort of play a political card. So shouldn't she be rewarded for that, like anyone who plays a good political card?
Well, does playing a good political card, though, mean that you're qualified or that you have the right type of intelligence
the
or the
voters
right perspective
will decide who's qualified.
to be the senator from New York? I'm not exactly sure.
What do you think?
You're
going to support her? You're going to endorse her right tonight, aren't you?
No, I'm still holding out for Fran Drescher, as I said before. And I think, that's good. Make this as farcical and embarrassing as possible. We've got, a clown act in Al Franken, who might be a senator from Minnesota. We've got Caroline Kennedy, who's a dingbat from New York. We've got this mess in Illinois with Roland Burris and our governor. The Democrats are like we said earlier in the show, when your opponent is busy destroying himself, don't interrupt. So I want the Democrats to continue on doing this.
I'll agree with Dan only about the mess in Illinois. I think that Al Franken's going to be a good senator from Minnesota. He's a very smart guy.
Oh, yeah. He's very measured.
He's not
very
measured.
Responsible,
he's
not proportional.
Very measured.
We'll wait and see. I'm going to give Al Franken a good chance to be a good senator. And I also think – I don't think Caroline Kennedy is a dingbat. I think she has been – she's a smart woman. She's written some interesting books about the Constitution. She's a thoughtful person. She hasn't done the politicking. I agree with Georgia. It is always disquieting when someone comes in and claims basically it's this right of taking office because of your last name. We sort of fought a revolution to stop that, even though we in many cases continue to elect.
We don't do it in Illinois. We don't do it in Illinois.
Primogenitor.
Your last name has never been held against you. Let's go to Mike in Joliet, Illinois on WLS and Coast to Coast.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Fine, Mike. How are you?
Good. I've been listening for an hour. I listen occasionally, and the one thing I've noticed, particularly with the female guest, and I apologize for not knowing your name. I missed it along the way. But
Georgia Logothites is the name.
Oh, thank you. We're making blanket generalizations about the success or failures of the Bush administration, and I'm not saying everything they did was perfect, but, Eric Zorn characterized our action in Iraq as a misadventure. Iraq has turned out to be very successful. We had more murders in Chicago in 2008 than deaths of soldiers in Iraq. And we have 140,000 troops on Iran's doorstep, and we have a fledgling democracy now in Iraq. And we did have economic success between 2002 and 2007, and there were some successes. And I've just been listening to this show tonight, and we make these statements without challenge and without backing up the statement we're making. We simply call it a failure and we move on.
How many people in Iraq? I mean, human beings died in Iraq last year. You compared deaths of people in Chicago by murder to deaths of U.S. servicemen in Iraq. What about the Iraqi civilians and Iraqi military and police?
I think if you look at the facts, the Iraqi civilian deaths are down substantially. I think if you look at the facts, the democracy is taking hold in Iraq. We are turning things over. In fact, I believe within the last couple of weeks, the Green Zone was turned over to Iraqi control. I mean, there have been substantial successes in Iraq,
Mike,
that the media has completely ignored.
Mike, your point, by the way, I made a brief reference to it earlier in the show. Maybe you did not hear it, but next week we are going to be talking about – it'll be the last Sunday night of the Bush administration on Beyond the Beltway, and we're going to spend the 2 hours assessing the pluses and minuses of the Bush administration. We're going to have some people here who agree, as you do, and I'm sure we have many callers who agree with you, that there were certain things that George Bush did that were right, and you've heard me say probably umpteen times, I mean, George Bush and Dick Cheney, for whatever they did, and I'm not saying everything they did was right, but what I'm saying is George Bush and Dick Cheney have protected this nation since September 11th, 2001. And it is going to be the responsibility of the next president to be able to say the same thing. And if he isn't able to say the same thing, he's going to be a failure as a president.
I'm a strong supporter of George Bush. I think he did an incredible job under difficult circumstances. And I have to admit, I was going to apologize in advance because I knew this was the topic next week. But the statements were put out there unchallenged tonight. But, you know, understand this. I hope Barack Obama succeeds because if he doesn't, it's bad for all of us.
And I hope he's able to say the same thing, you know, in 4 years or 8 years if he makes, is reelected. I hope he's able to say the same thing, and I hope the presidents that follow them are able to say the same thing.
But at this particular time, the one thing
we did not need, in my view, in the post 9/11 world, we didn't need a lot of nitpicking as to how we were going to protect the American people. In my view, there's been way too much nitpicking as to how the American people have been presented. And I'm happy to hear that the president-elect isn't going to spend a lot of time going back to look at all the nitpicking and questioning whether or not it was right or wrong, or what, you know, whether we, you know, read somebody their Miranda rights, or whether we waterboarded or not. The fact is the American people have been protected since September 11th of 2011 because of the president and vice president.
America's interest first. They're playing this game of progressiveness and liberalism, and they should have constitutional rights. Absolutely not. They were captured trying to kill our soldiers.
What does our country stand for?
They do not have constitutional rights.
Hey, caller, what does our country stand for anyway, if it doesn't stand for constitutional rights? If it doesn't stand for – I mean, Bruce is sort of dismissing that some of this stuff is nitpicking, the things in the Patriot Act, the invasions of privacy that have been justified.
I think some of it has been nitpicking
in the context of what the result stands for protecting our citizens in our country under our Constitution against those who are trying to kill us.
Our Constitution.
Our Constitution, not theirs. They have the opportunity to have rights like that.
Do you count 9/11?
They've chosen to have dictatorship.
Do you count 9/11 against George Bush?
They've chosen to kill innocent people.
Do you count that against George Bush? You're giving him all his credit. Do you count 9/11 against George Bush? He got warned about it.
No, actually, I count 9/11 against Clinton administration.
Yeah, you count 9/11 against George Bush?
Well, everyone talks about how he's kept...
had that intelligence as well, and they failed to succeed on it also.
He'd been president for, what, 9 months at that point, or 8.5 months at that point? I mean, it was on his watch that it happened.
Barack Obama is going to have the entire intelligence apparatus of the United States replaced with his own people in 8 months? Are you serious?
You want to go back and blame 9/11 on Clinton? Is that what you want to do?
I think the blame for 9/11 is shared across party lines.
Well, how do you credit the success? Because the way I would say that, by the way,
when I just give the credit to George Bush and to Dick Cheney, I'm going to give the credit to some Democratic members of Congress. Because you know what? The Democratic members of Congress were called in and told about a lot of these programs that once it hit the New York Times, all of a sudden, their knee-jerk reaction, they got to go out and start pointing fingers again when they knew about it. Nancy Pelosi knew about it.
But how much
Dick
credit?
Dick Gephardt knew about it.
How much credit do
and
you give the administration,
for it.
Though,
especially voting for it?
Well, here's the thing. All intelligence officials across the board have testified before Congress. It's not a matter of if we're going to be attacked again. It's a matter of when. So how much credit do you really give the administration for essentially just beating the clock, for running out the clock? And what, if the attack happens in February, all of a sudden Barack Obama's presidency has failed? When we have containers...
It's going to be a big problem for
them. Well, when we have containers... But listen, when we have containers coming in that are not scanned, a terrorist attack on this country is practically effortless if the terrorists decide to choose to do so. I mean, leaving aside, obviously.
And why have they not chosen to do
it? It hasn't been effortless, and they have tried to do so because we know.
What have they tried to do?
What are you talking about?
The Sears Tower thing? Is that your idea?
There was the Seattle, there was an effort, there was a cell in Oregon. I mean,
Millennium. The Millennium.
They haven't tried to do anything. That's not true. Am I surprised? I'll tell you what. I'm surprised that we haven't seen in our top 10 major cities somebody walk into a restaurant and blow the place up, like a suicide bomb. I'm surprised
it can happen at any time, whether it's under a Democratic president or a Republican.
Let me answer your question. Does he get credit for running out the clock? Yes. And if nothing happens on Barack Obama's watch, does he get credit for running out the clock? Yes.
There's your two answers, two yeses right there. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly. Another 15 minutes and your calls when we roll on from Chicago.
Prostate cancer. It's an important subject. Did you know there are more new cases of prostate cancer each year than any other cancer? That's why it's so important to get regular doctor checkups and ask about ways to reduce your risk of prostate cancer. You can also switch your multivitamin to One-A-Day Men's Health Formula, a complete multivitamin specially formulated with selenium, which emerging research suggests may help reduce the risk of prostate cancer. One-A-Day, the official multivitamin of Major League Baseball.
I do like to tell jokes. My jokes are pretty corny.
You've always wanted to know who's on Match.com, and we want you to know it's okay to look.
Knock, knock. Who's there? And it'll be Cal. And he'll say, Cal Moo.
His Match.com username is Junkfoodie, and you can email him right now.
It's never really that funny, but it's so corny they laugh anyway.
With 20,000 new people joining every day, we guarantee you'll find someone special in 6 months, or we'll give you 6 months free. Visit Match.com today for details.
We're back on the air with Barb from Palatine, Illinois. Go ahead. You're on the air, Barb. Barb, are you there? Line four.
Simple thing. Caroline Kennedy has never voted. And she's alluded to that when she was interviewed, and she gave some lame excuse for that. She's raised three kids, not three children, so much for class. I just can't see her as a senator. And then to have them endorse Barack Obama when this Lewinsky fellow wrote his radical book and dedicated it to Sirhan Sirhan, who murdered Robert Kennedy, and here the Kennedys are backing Obama. This whole catch-22 is just beyond my ability to rationalize. And Caroline Kennedy, I could probably do better than she can, and that's not saying much. And all I do is get involved in grassroots politics.
Lewinsky?
I think it's pathetic.
I think she's talking about Bill Ayers, a Saul Alinsky.
Saul Alinsky, not Monica Lewinsky.
But she's talking about Bill Ayers.
Right? We got Saul Alinsky and Monica Lewinsky.
It's a limerick opportunity.
Well, so I said the...
Yes.
If I got the name wrong, Jay, I'm sorry. I mean,
that's all right. We just want to clarify
it
because there's some people that think there's connection.
One last thing. That waterboarding is supposedly cruel and unusual punishment. How would you characterize decapitation?
That's the other side.
And I don't think waterboarding.
Start making our moral compass equal to that of the terrorists? I think that's pretty. That's not the wisest way to judge American policy.
All it is fear. How do you think? What do you think those fellows who were decapitated? What kind of fear did they have? And if this is saving our soldiers, why not? And it's not hurting them. It's just scaring them. And the thought of having those guys let loose in the States or brought up here if they close Guantanamo, put it in Dick Durbin's backyard, not mine.
Well, I would say that one of the things that the president-elect clearly stated today is that you have a lot of prisoners that nobody wants. Foreign nations don't want them.
Absolutely.
We don't want them. I mean, who's going to take them?
Well, then leave them where they are. They have it better than they've ever had it in years and years and years. Nobody wants them. Doesn't that tell you something?
Does that tell you something?
Well, yeah, nobody.
Well,
wants
I'm going to ask our guest here. Does that tell you something? Nobody wants these people.
Well, if you've been holed up in Guantanamo, where the president of the United States has repeatedly stated that only the worst of the evildoers go, of course you have some type of stigma attached to you, and it's going to be hard to get even your home country to take you back. And we're obviously talking about the innocent prisoners here, not the ones that
are. Well, you know, if you think it's so great to, why don't you offer them a place to live? Why don't you put them next door to your house?
Well,
I'll tell you what.
If it was just Bush's rhetoric, they're not bad guys.
When there is a system set up whereby, because the type of sweep that took place after 9/11, especially after the Iraq War, was a huge sweep. And the idea that every single person in Guantanamo is absolutely guilty, I think, has been disproved by many type of international studies and organizations.
Oh, yeah,
But the point being, if there's somebody that's innocent there, then they have absolutely the right to have a fair trial, to have their due process, and to eventually be in.
But under our Constitution, these guys attacked.
Not all of them.
Not all of them, though. There's a presumption of innocence.
The World Trade was citizens, not military.
Barack Obama said today he's not going to spend a lot of time talking about this. Let's go to Mike in Spokane, listening to us on KXLY. Mike, nice to hear from you. Are you there, Mike? Are you Mike in Spokane? Are you there? He's not there. How about Rob on line three on WLS in Chicago?
Good evening. How are you?
Fine, Rob. How are you?
I've been listening for the last 2 hours, and here's my conclusion on all this. We are a mess.
We are.
You know, I'm glad to hear that Obama is not going to spend much time debating our past history. You can go to the Pentagon, and you can go into the Pentagon Library. There are a plethora of lessons learned. One of these days, we'll actually read them and take lessons from them. You know, what's killing us is the same thing that's killing the Palestinians and the Israelis. And it's not missiles and bullets out there. It's politics. One of these days, this country is going to have to pull together under a leadership and, yes, talk about taking the moral high ground and take a hard look at how we interact our policies, both domestically and abroad as well. We can't go into foreign countries pushing democracy and forcing elections to be held in countries that don't understand the elections, because in the case of Hamas, that's exactly what we may get, the people we don't want in office. And I remind you is that Hamas is a democratically elected government, whether we like it or not, and I don't. And as far as Hamas having the view Israel, which they do, there are hawks in the Israeli Knesset that don't want peace. They want the destruction of Hamas first. Politics is a killer. As I said to your call screener, there are Arabs and Jews who work very nicely in this country. I have a friend of mine who is a Jewish manufacturer. He has Arabs in his payroll. They work very well together here. As a Palestinian friend of mine who works with that Jew told me, the reason that what's killing my people back home is politics. And I agree with that. What's killing people
now, are you saying that you think the politicians are stirring up the masses, or is it the masses that are putting pressure on the politicians to throw them out the red meat?
All I'm saying is that it's the politicians causing the grief on all sides. We should not be supporting any government, whether it's Israel, whether it's Hamas, or whoever, when civilians are being killed at all. Actually, we have to go after the bad guys. The Israelis, who I do support, are sometimes their own worst enemies. We cannot support the killing of civilians.
On that note, sir, we are out of time. I thank you for your call. Unfortunately, you came in a little bit late for us, but we are out of time. I want to thank Dan Proft, commentator for WLS Radio, and Don Wade and Roma for joining us, representing the conservative perspective this evening. George Logothites, who is a contributing editor of the Daily Kos, and your handle is, how do we get
Georgia
to you?
Georgia 10.
Georgia 10.
Yes.
And also joining us this evening has been Eric Zorn, columnist for the Chicago Tribune. And a quick answer to everybody, Rod Blagojevich, the likelihood of him being convicted by the Senate in Illinois. Yes or no?
100%, yes.
Yes, 100%.
Yes, thank God.
Okay, 200% and one, thank God. I think so. I think so. But I'm still worried about until the vote happens. 1-800-723-8210 is the phone number. Next week, we're going to talk about George Bush. Have a great weekend.
If you have irritable bowel syndrome, Digestive Advantage could be your best friend. It's a safe and natural, friendly probiotic made especially for you. Look for Digestive Advantage Irritable Bowel Syndrome and other Digestive Advantage products in the Digestive Aid section of retailers everywhere. Just remember the name, Digestive Advantage, a friend indeed. Mm-hmm. Digestive Advantage Irritable Bowel Syndrome is a medical food for the dietary management of IBS to be used under the supervision of your physician.
Prostate cancer. It's an important subject. Did you know there are more new cases of prostate cancer each year than any other cancer? That's why it's so important to get regular doctor checkups and ask about ways to reduce your risk of prostate cancer. You can also switch your multivitamin to One-A-Day Men's Health Formula, a complete multivitamin specially formulated with selenium, which emerging research suggests may help reduce the risk of prostate cancer. One-A-Day, the official multivitamin of Major League Baseball.
Scratchy sweaters, skin irritations? Winter means it's time for Gold Bond Anti-Itch Cream. Dry winter skin itch? Get the quick fix. Dry indoor heat? Get the quick fix. Gold Bond Anti-Itch Cream works on itch and irritation fast with two maximum strength itch fighters. Got a patchy skin itch? Look for the healing seal. Gold Bond Medicated Anti-Itch Cream for dry, itchy, even painful winter skin. It's the quick fix for almost every itch. Use as directed.
Who's always there for you? Your mum? Maybe, yeah, but sometimes she's a bit chatty with you. Oi, when are you going to get a girlfriend business? Now, GEICO, they're always there for you. They have been for over 70 years. They insure over 8 million policyholders, and their customer satisfaction is at 97%. With GEICO service, no wonder it's the third largest automobile insurance company. Your mum might cook better, but everything else, it's a very close call.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
A sore throat can ruin a family outing, but my kids know I have the touch that can make it better. It's called the Chloraseptic Touch.
Now moms have new Chloraseptic Maximum Strength Liquid Lozenges with the Liquid Medicine Center. You get the strongest medicine available without a prescription for fast relief that starts the moment Chloraseptic Max touches your throat. Plus, it coats to protect.
When they feel better, we all enjoy ourselves.
New Chloraseptic Maximum Strength Liquid Lozenges. One touch relief. The Chloraseptic Touch. Use as directed.
You know, one of my favorite places to sing is my car.
You've always wanted to know who's on Match.com, and we want you to know it's okay to look.
A 1962 Cadillac on a long road trip. I mean, what else are you going to do?
He's Match.com member Crooner Cool, and you can email him right now.
Baby.
With 20,000 new people joining every day, we guarantee you'll find someone special in 6 months, or we'll give you 6 months free. Visit Match.com today for details.